Good evening, everybody. This is Writers in the Round. Our guests for this show are two of the eight finalists in the songwriter stage held in the Camp House on Martin Luther King Boulevard for the past 4 months. Our two guests this evening were the winners of the songwriter stage, which was held Wednesday, November 13th. Together with the finalists from the previous three shows in August, September, and October, they competed in the final show this past Friday, December 6th. The two winners from the final will be on next week's program. For this evening, our guests are two very different but equally talented singers and songwriters. From Chicago, Jimmy DiLorenzo, and from Chattanooga, Emily Pate, with Cameron Alan Chicot playing guitar. Incidentally, as you're about to hear, Cameron is a gifted guitar player, primarily a classical guitarist. He can seemingly assay almost any style. He was the featured guitarist with the Chattanooga prog rock band Glass Hammer for several years. He also recently competed with two other guitarists for the annual Guitarist of the Year accolade bestowed by Guitar World magazine in London. He didn't win the competition in September, but many people who have seen his performance on YouTube felt he should have. Nevertheless, he has the distinction of being one of three guitarists from across the world to compete in the contest this past September. And this evening, he's playing with Emily Pate.
It's just a moment, but a moment don't last. It's a gift for the taking. Sun break through the clouds, summon overreaching. We've been walking in the desert, in the desert, baby. We've been talking in the desert, in the desert, baby. Share the sugar. This game's about. Share the sugar. Tell me what you figured out. Share the sugar. My tongue is always sticking out. No sizing up. No double team. Superhero be a screening machine. Find your groove, yeah, find your speed. A broken shoulder, skinned up knees. We've been walking in the desert, in the desert, baby. We've been talking in the desert, in the desert, baby. Share the sugar, tell me what you feel. Sugar, tell me what this game's about. Share the sugar, tell me what you figured out. Share the sugar, my tongue is always sticking out. Blind I see, and deaf ears hear. Hearts of stone finally feel a feel. Yes, they feel a feel. Yes, they feel. Yes, they feel. Yes, they feel. Share the sugar and tell me what you figured out. Share the sugar. Tell me what this game's about. Share the sugar. Tell me what you figured out. Share the sugar. My tongue is always sticking out.
Oh, nicely done, you two. Emily Pate is our guest. Cameron is the guitar player, Cameron Chico. And if you're going to have a guitar player, well, you know, go for the best, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Cameron was just telling us about having been to London. This was, I think, sometime in the summer, right?
This was a couple weeks ago. A month and a half, something like that, yeah.
And how many people were you up against?
There were two other finalists. And it was a little unusual, actually, for me because, I mean, it was Acoustic Guitarist of the Year was the competition, and I entered with my solo sort of half classical, half jazz, nylon string guitar kind of shtick. I mean, I consider myself a classical guitar player, and the other players are very much in the sort of Michael Hedges-derived fingerstyle guitar with the percussion and all of that, and slapping harmonics. And I mean, there was a very codified style that I was up against, and I was surprised to be the token nylon string player in the competition. So I certainly didn't expect to win, and I didn't win the competition, but it was fun. And the other two finalists, fantastic players, Christy Lene and Daniel Pajim. Daniel, I was very glad to meet and kept in touch with him and been a good friend, but fantastic players. Anybody who's into that kind of style should check out the other finalists from the competition.
It's interesting that there would be two of them. In a competition, you know, that's to identify the best guitar player, because that, as you say, that's very much a style,
right?
Sort of Eddie Van Halen with an acoustic guitar, right?
Right, and you know, it's funny when you look at comments and stuff on their videos or similar players on YouTube or look at reviews of records. It's pretty polarizing. There's a lot of people that love all the theatrics on acoustic guitar. I don't know how you feel, Jimmy, but it's I love that kind of stuff. I just don't play it, and I appreciate it as, you know, this completely different vocabulary with the alternate tunings and all that. But some people just loathe that style of playing. It's amazing. I didn't feel that I played particularly well at all in the actual finals. I'm kind of mortified that video is floating around out there, actually. But you can see some comments on there with people saying things like, oh, you know, he should have won. They always pick the, you know, the trickster playing all the theatrics. And I'm like, well, I appreciate that, but I like that stuff too, you know.
Is that true? Do you think that they're bewitched by that kind of theatricality?
I think so. I mean, I think even just tuning the guitar, as I've done today, to an open tuning, I think immediately there's some people that are put off by that and think that somehow it's gimmicky or, you know, making it easier, as though that were something you wouldn't want to do. I don't know. I mean,
it strikes me, Alan, that's the thing with competitions. If you don't know what the rubric is,
right,
then, you know, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it?
Right.
So,
I'm sure these two are wondering the same thing in terms of a singer-songwriter competition, you know. So what exactly is
that? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. I have a feeling that by the end of the hour, people are going to say, well, how do you choose between Emily and Jimmy? I really like what you just did, Emily.
Thanks.
How long have you and Cameron been playing together?
What, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
3 weeks?
Yeah, maybe a little bit longer, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. Like, I got to know him a little bit in 2016 when I was moving back here, because I used to play here around 2012, 2013, moved away, came back, and I only knew him musically. Like, everyone else is kind of doing their own thing, or they weren't playing music anymore. Like, it was a whole different wave of musicians that had come through. So I kind of shared a few songs with him, but we never collaborated or did anything. And then I just kind of went off and just kind of did my own thing. And then, like, not musically, but anyway. And then I was like, you know, people have been asking me, I've been going to open mics, and people have been asking me to do this competition. I was just really, like, annoyed. I was like, I hate competing. I don't want to do this. And then I was like, I got, like, mad enough to, like, want to do it. And I was like, Chico, come on, Chico, you're my guy. Like, you're my guy. And so he totally agreed. And I just started presenting my songs, and he just did really well, like, representing them. So
that's why I'm so surprised. It sounded as if you have been having that conversation that you were having in that song for quite some time. You know, that you just seemed so comfortable with each other.
It was pretty easy, you know, getting these songs together. Not easy, but it was pretty natural and organic, you know, playing these songs with Emily. Because we grew up with a lot of similar sounding pop and rock music that she's sort of hearkening back to in a lot of ways. And that's one reason I enjoy playing this so much, is I don't get to do anything like this, and, you know, when I'm wearing my other hats. And so it's a language that we both already speak. And her demo tracks that she's given me, and, you know, songs are already charted out and very, very well thought out. And you know, she's just asking me to basically be fingers to help execute the parts and realize the ideas, but the songs are very much codified and worked out, you know, before I even sat down to work on them with her.
Okay. I'll take that at face value, sure. Even though it's quite apparent to me, and I suspect other people listening, that while everything you're saying is true, it's in the execution. And your execution is so fluid and so responsive, and Emily seems so comfortable with you that it didn't seem as if, it was almost as if Emily was playing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean...
Doesn't it feel that way to you, Emily? That the camera is right there with you, supporting you sometimes, playing a counterpoint to you sometimes.
It was easy when he like kind of just came around the song or whatnot, like kind of surrounded my voice. So that's kind of in that sense. But yeah, I mean, it's still different for me.
I think it just comes down to it being, like I said, like a common language. I mean,
There's
plenty of original ideas, but I mean, like harmonically speaking and rhythmically speaking, I mean, obviously there are devices that Emily's using that many songwriters have used, and you only have to hear, you know, one of those expressed once or twice. Okay, I know exactly what you want, and I can do it. You know,
yeah, we're both heavily like 90s driven, like stuff like that. We had listened to the same stuff, so when I said, hey, I want more of this or I like this, it's like, oh yeah, like totally.
Say no more. You know, that's kind of how it goes.
So. Give me an example of the kind of acts that you have in common.
I'll give you an example. Like I love the Sundays, the band the Sundays.
Oh yeah.
And one thing that I love about that music is, although the tunes may be, you know, G, C, D, E minor and capoed versions thereof, there's always a colorful, shimmery kind of quality, and the parts sound easy to play because there are a lot of open strings and the guitar sits a certain way in the mix, and that's a sound that I'm always kind of going for. So Emily might bring a song that is, I can sort of give that treatment to a little bit. And I think, like you were pointing out, I mean, one reason why it may sound sort of effortless or fluid is I've worked to try to make the parts come across that way. Because I think it's important for that style. If it sounds like you're working really hard to play a 3 or 4 or 5 chord tune, it's not probably going to come across as convincing as it would otherwise.
Yeah, and his idea of calling it like the Sundays was my like Sixpence None the Richer and my Juliana Hatfield. You know what I mean? And so, but I had to kind of be like, yeah, that's what I mean. Even though it's like different people, but same style, you know. And so that was really, really helpful. Really helpful.
Well, it's always kind of interesting in hindsight to see that at a given point in time there was clearly a sound.
Yeah.
That was dominant. It's not always evident, I don't think, when we're in the moment, but in hindsight, you can see it quite clearly. Because the way you were describing the Sundays would equally fit the Cranberries.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or maybe even the Smiths at a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
There's kind of an optimistic quality to that era rock, and especially the acoustic rock. And I think Emily's music has a lot of that. Even if something is a tune in a minor key, or even if the lyrics aren't particularly, you know, the most uplifting thing, there's still sort of a feel-good quality about that music that's really, I think, missing from stuff today, for better or worse.
Yep. I was just reading on Nick Lutzko's website. He's talking about this new album that he's just finished. He said, I'm in the studio by myself, like I always am, and I started writing these songs, and he said, I've found myself so distracted by the situation in the country at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a commonality. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, whether it is conscious or not, are beginning to feel, well, distracted is one word, distressed is another. I hear that in a lot of people's voices, not only musicians, but just people. The conversation seems to be the same conversation everybody is having, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm not sure, were the 90s more optimistic? I guess, you know, it was Bill Clinton and, you know, for better or worse, the person who's in the White House seems to affect the mood of the country. And there was this kind of feeling of optimism, I guess, at that point.
I think it's social media is destroying the world. I don't really think it's politics. So I'll just beg to differ right here.
I'll second that. No, I mean, I think
Well, isn't social media politics too?
Yes, no.
Do you think that social media contributes to people feeling sort of generally a sense of malaise?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. It will cause you nothing but unhappiness and misery.
I think it's just difficult to have a real conversation because you have too much time to respond. And everybody, I always think of it as like they're leaving flaming dogs of poop on other people's like digital doorsteps and running away, you know, and then waiting a day before somebody responds like, I'm going to get them back, you know. So it's like nobody's actually sitting down and discussing, looking anyone in the eye to discuss these things. Yeah. And people are pretty awesome generally. Coming from Chicago, which is a much different environment, Tennessee is, I thought I was going to run into things that I really haven't run into because the people have been way better and way more wonderful than I had envisioned. And personal conversation would help.
Forgive me, Jimmy. Let me introduce you.
Yeah, sorry.
This is my guest, Jimmy DiLorenzo. As you just heard, Jimmy moved here from Chicago. Just like me, he could have been a physicist, but turned it down.
Hey.
Well, actually, that's not true. But of him it is, and not of me. You became a physics teacher, but you turned down the opportunity to study to become a physicist to make music.
I did. I was working for the government in New Mexico at Los Alamos National Laboratories, mostly programming computers at like a low level, working for some great people that basically would just give me daily assignments of like data conglomeration and to come back. And it was amazing to learn about, but after 6 months of it, kind of understanding that everybody was just kind of faking it, trying to get funding and everything like that. And I mean, they were doing some great things too, and there were big questions answered, but the time scale was really so long of like launching spacecraft and deciding what you want to study. And I in particular study space physics. So it was like, I always say it's like trying to understand the weather on like, you know, in Saturn in particular, of like a planet that's like 14 times the size of ours or whatever with like one thermometer, you know, and you're like, I think I'm going to get what's going on this planet. You know, like it's just an impossibility. So after a while, I just decided to move to New York, actually. I never made it. And I landed in Chicago, where I met my wife, and stayed there and did the same thing, and here I am today.
What do you mean you did the same thing? You were a physicist in Chicago?
No. I was going to New York to be a musician, so I just did it in Chicago instead. And
where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. So
you kind of came full circle.
Yeah, I came full circle and lived in my mom's basement for a little bit, you know.
Did you go to Los Alamos in New Mexico?
Yes, that's where I lived for a year. And before that, I lived in Montana for a few years where I went to school.
Were you at that point going to be part of the space program then?
Yeah, basically that's what I was. So they kind of offered me a government clearance to stick around and work on some more secretive projects, I guess. I just didn't really want to do that. I just loved playing music. All I did while I was there, I was living alone in like a town of government physicists and the janitors, I think. And so I just kind of felt like I had no friends. I just hung out and wrote music all night. And it was an easy decision, really. It wasn't that hard to make. I would have been rich by now, but, you know, so it goes.
That's an interesting comment you made about making music. Something about you like to make music, but not with musicians.
No, I think I don't know what I meant by that exactly. I think I've always kind of never really had a great relationship the actual music industry, and just I've really enjoyed, you know, for lack of a better term, like suffering through the things that most people suffer through. Like, I don't want to write a whole album about road songs, you know. I don't want to do that. I try to make my things kind of focused on different aspects of human life. I'm working on like my family album now, you know. I've done my working album, but it's like the white collar work album, you know. I always love like coal mining songs, so I had the goal of writing like bunch of white collar working songs, because that's a whole different kind of pain, you know. And so there's just so much
true
to mine there, you know.
Well, if you'll forgive me, I think maybe I could paraphrase what you said as that you prefer to have music as an avocation.
Yeah, I think so.
That you'd rather make music for pleasure without worrying about making money or selling records or any of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really believed that I'm an artist exactly, but I think your art stays more pure when you don't have to worry about selling it, you know. And so I have no problem not worrying about selling it now, being a teacher. So it helps me do whatever I want, whenever I want, and that brings me much greater joy.
Your comments bring Bruce Springsteen to mind, who said, I've been writing songs about working people for 50 years and I've never worked a day in my life. I think sometimes the idea that, two things, talking about being a physicist and feeling as if you were an outsider. You questioned whether you're an artist, and I think many artists, and Emily and Cameron could probably speak to this too, always feel like outsiders, that it's difficult to be an artist if you're not an outsider, because to write about something, you have to have some distance on it. So even though Bruce Springsteen has never picked up a pickaxe or dug a hole in the ground with a shovel, doesn't mean that he doesn't understand how it feels to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
It was sort of quintessentially self-deprecating on his part to say that a guy who in some ways is the 20th and 21st century equivalent of Woody Guthrie, who himself was a middle-class kid. Many times the art is not necessarily the product of the vessel through whom it comes. When you pick up a guitar or when you sing, as Emily has, you are opening yourself up to the universe to support you. And you know, so many people have said, I didn't write this song. It just came through me. And I think that's, you know, because they've freed their subconscious to be open to it.
I think so, yeah.
I agree.
You're in a really exalted position. You didn't even realize it, did you?
Really? No, not really.
The universe is there holding your hand.
I'm still thinking about, like, would
at least I've got one friend.
Would Bruce Springsteen still do it to this day if he didn't have to? Would Bruce Springsteen still be doing it? It's always a curiosity. Like, I think in your 20s, when my 20s, you know, I was always working to bring people in, and then I had a realization at some point, like, no, I don't want anyone in here with me. I want everyone out of here, you know, because I don't want to be trying to, you know, get them to like my Facebook page and et cetera, you know. I just want to keep everybody out, you know. All right, well, I'll play a song then, I guess. It's always dangerous to start with a new one, but this one's about my wife, and we've been together a long time. Still get to write songs about her, because she still loves the truth, which is a nice thing. Yes, so that's why she has double-digit songs about her. At least, I don't know, more than that probably. She might be in all of them, I don't know, but it's called Other Arms. I wish I loved you like I did back then, when everything was just beginning. Now I love you like I love the air. Sometimes I forget that it's there. Cause now I need you for more than love. I need an old friend. I need a new friend too. The love I feel for you I can't describe. Though still sometimes I try. You are my other leg. You are my other arm. You are my brother. You are my lover. You are my sister. You are my family. I love you like fishes love the sea. Mm-hmm. But now I come home and I say, hello, we share stories about work. Then you make food for us. I do the dishes and pack the lunch. So much excitement. So much excitement. So much excitement. You are my other leg. You are my other arm. You are my brother. You are my lover. You are my sister. You are my family. I love you like the fishes love the sea.
Well, thanks, Jimmy. Jimmy DiLorenzo is our guest, along with Emily Pate and Cameron Alanchico. This is Writers in the Round. So there was a young couple came by here a week or so ago. They've been making music together as long as they've been married, I think, and they haven't been married that long, maybe 2 or 3 years, something like that. And he said, I had no idea it was going to be so intimate. They know everything about you. And it seems so obvious, and yet it isn't, is it? It's only when, as you experience it, you come to understand what it means to be married to somebody. My wife is fond of saying, because she works with students who are often sophomore or junior, so they're at the point where they're thinking about getting married or thinking about taking a partner at least, and that many of them have, as we, I suspect we all have had at that age, a very idealized notion of what it means to be somebody else's partner. And when you talk about having known your wife for a long time, there's a promo actually for one of the NPR shows running at the moment, and the guy says, your relationship with the people in your life is going to change every day. And, you know, he just kind of tosses it off, but it's a pretty profound truism, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to find those incremental ways you can push it in the right direction, I think, is important.
And to be flexible enough that you flow with it when it goes in directions you didn't expect it to.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty good at that.
How long have you been married?
4 years now, but we've been together for 11 years or something, maybe 12. I don't know, she'd know better. But.
Just getting started, Jimmy.
Yeah.
I'd love to find someone that I can share life with and be my best friend and, you know, all those things to me. But the reality is, it's like, you know, you get closer, you try to make the incremental to the right direction, and it's like every time you try, it just seems like it's just another train wreck, and you got to wade through it again. And then, I don't know, it's got to be easier than that, I think.
I was able to preserve some sarcasm in the bridge of that song with the so
excitement.
Much excitement.
I knew. Hey, man, it's all in the mundane, like what you're like in the mundane, yeah. Man. So, get it.
I should interject here.
Please.
This program has a way of doing that, and it's not by my design. It's just... it's the reality that what you are writing about and what you are thinking about is very personal and frequently uncomfortable. And this becomes a kind of, you know, psychiatrist couch session. It's not intended to be that either. But at the same time, all I could say in response to what you just said, Emily, is Sweetie, you're not alone. We're all going through the same thing.
Yeah.
Ruby Dee, she was married to, I can't remember his name, but they were partners professionally and personally for something like 50 years. She said, a successful marriage is one in which there are more little marriages than there are little divorces.
I like that. I do. I really like that. Good.
That's the nature of it.
You're right.
So on another note, I just wanted to say, I mean, just kind of to bring things back to a musical point for a second. I mean, no, I was just telling these two outside and you know, that a lot of people ask me all the time, like, it must be so nerve-wracking, or you must be full of anxiety to perform for people, right? And especially if they see me in the context of maybe playing, you know, a formalized hour-and-a-half recital of solo guitar music and virtuosic stuff and everything. It's like, I would take that any day a million times over putting myself out there like these two just did and singing a song. I mean, no matter how simple the song, or I cannot imagine putting myself out there in that way. And I mean, because just to even have a conversation about subjects like that, let alone to, you know, to sing about them. I mean, so kudos to these two for doing that. And songwriters everywhere, you know.
Yeah. Back at you, Cameron, I know exactly what you mean. And that same thought has occurred to me many, many times. Particularly, interestingly, young women are sitting in here and singing songs that are just utterly soul-bearing. But then again, you know, making music and singing and playing is very therapeutic for a lot of people. Any kind of writing, actually. You know, I started this program because I wanted to see if there was a commonality between writers, poets, novelists, short story writers, and songwriters. Yeah. It would, after a year of doing these shows, my guess is that the impetus is very similar. The line between poetry and songwriting is very fine.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Although a friend of mine said, when we got on that topic, he would write a lyric, and he is first a poet. And my friend Tom would look at his lyric and he'd say, this is good, but you've got to write it so it sings. Do you find writing difficult?
Sometimes. Some people can just, you know, sit down and make it a discipline even when they don't feel it. But I guess sometimes it's hard to convey. But when it's like the right topic and I'm got the right fuel, then yeah, it's pretty easy. But it's got to have the right, like, the right stuff together at the same time. Or
the right impetus?
Yeah, right.
Do you care to share with us what is the impetus for any given song you've written that you like?
I mean, a lot of it's unrequited love. I mean, like, normally it's like that's kind of the fuel or whatnot. But it could be anything. It really could. Normally it's just anger, like, towards myself. Like, oh, man, like, not using this gift, or I'm not doing this, or I'm not doing this, or things that I see. Normally, it's just the fuel. It's normally anger. That's the fuel. It just puts me over the edge about something, and then I'm able to write about it. So, but that and unrequited love, and yeah, that's probably my main things.
It covers all your bases there, generally.
Yeah, I guess. Actually a very happy person. I mean, I think I'm a little jaded, but not as bad as this one over here.
I'd like for you to sing a song, Emily, but okay. Before you do, I would say to you that life is not linear.
Yeah.
It's circular.
Right.
And if it feels as if it is going in a direction you don't like, trust me, first, you're not alone. And second, it's not going to keep going that way. I think it's time for a song. What do you think?
All right, yeah, sounds great.
I think we've talked ourselves into a number of different corners here.
And this has nothing to do with any of those corners, I don't think, this song.
A penny for your thoughts. Nickel for your gum. A dime for your time. Call. Don't let it rot a hole in your pocket. No, 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 he'll spend you how he wants if you let him.
at him. I'm not here for me, you're not here for you. No, 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 no. Life's only painful when you lack this truth. When you lack this truth. Bone for your fire. Song for your words. Book for your secrets. Skill for your nerve. Don't let it rot a hole in your pocket. No, 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 he'll spend you how he wants if you let him, let him. I'm not here for me, you're not here for you. No, 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 no. Life's only painful when you lack this truth. When you lack. Let it rot a hole in your pockets. Don't let it rot a hole in your pockets. Don't let it rot a hole in your pockets. He'll spend you how he wants if you let him, let him. I'm not here for me, you're not here for you. No, 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 no. Life's only painful when you lack this truth. I'm not here for me, you're not here for you. No, 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 no. How you feel is no excuse. No excuse. Find truth.
You two are good. Yeah. Would you like to do another? One of those is just not enough. That was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that
was great.
I love
that tune.
Thanks.
Blimey, I feel for you, Jimmy. That's just a stiff competition you got here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's one of those things where it's, they always say, you know, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. But I've really learned that, if you don't use it, you don't lose it. You just hear it coming out of someone else's mouth. Mm. And it's like, would you rather just, like, get it together and deliver what you have in your heart to say? Or would you rather have to hear it on a radio? You know, and it's like, no, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear it from me. I thought of it first. I was thinking about this for, years and years, and... anyway, so I kind of got mad enough to, have that happen to me so many times. It was just like, no. And we always want the gifts we don't have. We want, something else someone has. But most of the time, we just leave ours in a pocket. So
that's a very interesting way of looking at things, Emily.
Yeah.
Have you been thinking about writing songs and wanting to express yourself that way for? Much longer than you've actually been doing it?
I've been writing since I was like 20, but it's one of those things where I have all these unfinished things and I stopped playing for a while and I'd go to like some show or I'd hear something on the radio and I'm like, I had that melody like 10 years ago or I had this little piece of a song. I'm like, no, like, because it's like, yeah, sometimes I don't think I have, like I can play guitar well, so I don't play, and then when you don't play more, you don't, it causes lack of writing, and all these things, and you just find yourself in this shell, and it's like, no, like, I'm sick of that happening over and over again, so it kind of, provoked me to, like, start finishing stuff, and completing thoughts, and things like that, and those are the things that take the discipline. Those don't just write themselves, and that's the hard part. That's the grind of the songwriter process, if it doesn't just come all out at the same time. So,
and I think looking at handwritten songs by Joni Mitchell or Bob Dylan or any of the great writers, you know, it's full of scratchings.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
And we have no idea looking at it what draft that is.
Right,
but it's almost certainly not the first draft.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, totally. So, yeah, it's a process.
So it's a kind of ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you recorded anything?
I mean, we've done a couple of small recordings, and then I've recorded a couple songs with a Memphis friend, but we're kind of in that situation, too, where we just never finish anything. It's just hard to, as an artist, it's hard to, like, want to say, this is done. Like, there's always this thing, element of, like, not thinking it's done. Mm-hmm. And so, sometimes, that's why you need someone else, say, like a producer, be like, no, you're done. Like, you've got this amount of time, and after this, you're, you know, kind of that. I think if I had someone or something like that, that would be very helpful. There's just so many choices and options when you're in a studio. So, circle it back.
I think there are many people who feel as you do, Emily. Emily Pate and Cameron Allen Chico, I guess. Please play another tune. You guys complement each other so well.
Thank you. Thanks. That's good. That's fun.
Swallow me up into your arms, into your arms, or spit me out onto the ground, onto the ground. I ain't a fruit tree for the picking. You taste the sweet, but leave the rotten, forgotten. Drink me in, oh, drink me deep, all of me. Or hang me out, out to dry, out of sight. Well, I can't separate myself from myself, and you can't help what you can't help.
Nicely done.
Thanks.
Emily Pate and Cameron Allen-Chicot, our guests. If you're just joining us, Emily is one of the, everybody involved in the so-called songwriter showcase at the Camp House fervently denies that there's any measure of competition in it, even though there's a prize at the end of it. And there are four shows at which eight people play and two are chosen out of that eight to ultimately be the part of the eight people who play on the final night. Is it a competition? Certainly sounds like one, doesn't it? And when you have a guitar player of the caliber of our Cameron here, who was just in London recently, and so can legitimately be called a world-class player, and Emily's songs. Thank you so much for the music.
Thank you.
Jimmy, get in and share a couple of songs?
Why not? This is one of those white-collar working songs. Copies and smiles, memos, meetings, and lunch. I don't know why I am so thirsty. I must have just needed a walk. Chit-chat and rumors, the same pair of pants. I forget and I get caught staring. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, though it's best that we keep to ourselves. I'm still in love with the night. I miss that look in its eye. I miss making new friends. I miss forgetting the end. I'm still in love with the night. Friends and miss forgetting the end. I'm still in love with the night. I'm still in love with the night. I miss its body and I miss its mind. Sophistication and style, irreverent, prairie and wild, wild night. On Fridays, I'm too tired. I miss the Mexican food. I'm still in love with the night.
Jimmy DiLorenzo is our guest, along with Emily Pate and Cameron Alan Chicot. And frankly, I throw my hands up. I give up. Split the prize between you, for God's sake.
I love that song. It's so great.
Thank you.
Want more?
More, yeah. More praise.
Just love it. It's great. It's unexpected. And then, yeah, just love it.
Awesome.
It's great.
One more. Yeah, yeah. So it was funny earlier. We were talking, and I felt like the least cynical person in the room. But I can hang. I'll tell you what. All right, here's a song for you. You can find this on my SoundCloud. It's an old demo, but it's called The Saddest Song I Know. I wrote it on a sunny day, like the first day of summer after my first year of teaching.
Oh,
go
gosh.
Figure. Go figure. Anyway, where is it? Here we go. I just wanna sing you the saddest song I know. The one where I lose everything and I go find some rope. I hike out to our favorite tree, fashion up my noose. But don't tie it correctly, I just fall and get a bruise. My second knot is rudimentary, but I'm thinking it will work. My hopes are still up high as I come crashing to the dirt. Keep trying new techniques, but it comes loose every time. Till finally at 83, I get it right. My flesh becomes a feast for the squirrels and the birds. I slip out of the noose and I fall into the ferns. They find me 8 months later, just a pile of dried out bone. Throw me in a body bag and label me John Doe. They would have found a match. No ID, no jewelry, and no wedding ring. 'Cause love is never shiny, it's a black and porous thing. Quicker, I end up dying in a war. The year is 1580 and I'm beheaded by a sword. And as the blood drains from my brain, I see a dragon fly and realize that dying is the best way back in time.
Definitely one of those songs that you don't quite know what to say after that.
I know. We're going to end on that note.
Well
yeah.
done, man. That's
yeah,
great.
I suppose it really shouldn't have come as any surprise that two of the songwriters who have been judged by the audience and the judges at the songwriter stage as being two of the best in the city are also interesting conversationalists with a point of view on a range of topics, some of which we touched on in this program, but many of which, because of the demands of the time frame, didn't have time to include. If they are indeed our guests again next week, Jimmy DiLorenzo and Emily Pate, along with Cameron Alan Chicot, I am going to do as promised and let them play more than talk, because it's so much fun to listen to, aren't they? Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Richard Winham. See you next week.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't change your hair for me. Not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine. Stay. Each day is Valentine's Day.